Nuku 93 is Yvonne Thomas. Yvonne is a mentor and trustee with the Auckland Teaching Gardens Trust. She supports the community with garden plots, gardening courses, and supplying kai to food banks. We recorded this interview in her garden in Māngere, surrounded by manu and the local community tending to their plots. In this episode, she talks to us about her upbringing and how society has changed over her lifetime. She shares the importance of growing a garden, not only for sustainability and kai purposes, but also for learning some of life's greatest lessons. Whakarongo mai. Kia ora, I'm Kiane. Nuku is a movement. We're empowering Indigenous wahine to be agents of change, cultivating opportunities to shape the world we want. Through this series, we're meeting 100 kick-ass Indigenous wahine doing things differently. They show us how the world can be shaped by our unique Indigenous voice. It's all about who we are and not who we've been told to be. Nuku, mahine, mohine, kiahine.
Oh, kia ora te whānau. I am here with the beautiful Yvonne Thomas. Tēnā koe, Yvonne.
Piana.
Oh, ki te pai ahau. Yvonne, you're known as Auntie Yvonne to so many people, and we're here in Māngere. I love that, as I was just talking to you earlier, I said, you know, we've been all around the motu interviewing all of these women for Nuku, and it's so great to actually come home and to be able to interview some wahine at home. And you and I have met and done various things together before, and I've photographed you a number of times, and I've been here to these beautiful gardens, excuse me, and I'm so privileged to actually be in this space today to be able to sit down and have a kōrero with you and ask you a little bit more about your life and not just about the beautiful Auckland Teaching Gardens that you're such an integral part of. The manu are chirping behind us, and there are birds in the air, and there are bees in the air, and there are some flies in the air because we've got some compost going on around us too, which is all good. But before we start, or before we get into the thick of the kōrero, I would love to ask you to share with us a little bit about who you are and where you're from.
Okay, first off, I would tell you my kōrero, my whakapapa to you, and it's Ngā Puhi Nui Tonu, Te Ahuahu, Te Maunga, Ngā Puhi Te Iwi, Uri Tanewha, Te Hapu, Whenua, Te Marae, Tamati, Whānau, Ko Yvonne Thomas, Takunga Ngāua.
Kia ora.
And I was born in Kawakawa, where the train runs through the middle of the town, and lived my first 5 years in Okaihau on the farm that the Thomases had there. And with four generations, my mum and dad, my nana and papa, and my nana's mum and dad as well. So a very rich beginning to life. My dad's two brothers were there as well. My mum actually comes from the bottom of the South Island, and that's a story in its own as well. We've just lost mum at 93.
Wow.
And my dad is 95. And he is the eldest living Thomas at this point in time. So then we moved to Kaiakuhi, and Dad worked for a cousin there, Eric Baker. And then he joined the army, and we moved down to Auckland. And I hated Auckland, and Auckland hated me. I was right out of my depth. It was nothing like at home. But all these years later, I've had a home in Māngere Bridge since 1975, and I think that Māngere is the most amazing place in the world. Why do I say that? It has the most diverse group of people that you could ever want. We have refugees here from all over the place. We've got 9 different people here. And isn't it about people?
Mm.
And I guess that's how I have always been brought up. I'm one of the white ones in my family, and we've got black ones as well, and anywhere in between. And we have never, ever judged, and I don't understand people that judge. Mm. And I'll bet that a lot of them go to church as well, and that's very sad, really.
When I think about your whakapapa up to the north, and when we were just talking earlier and you were telling me about your marae being parawhenua, and I said, well, my great-grandmother is from parawhenua marae, and because my whakapapa here in Ihumata was so strong, we don't have a very strong connection to parawhenua, but I do have a whakapapa line there, and I said, oh, you know, you and I obviously must be related somewhere.
Yep.
Somewhere
absolutely
along those lines. But when you think about your childhood up north and think about, you know, small town Kawakawa and then Ōkaiho and Kaikohe, what was that like? What was one of the, you know, greatest things about being in that small rural community?
You seem to be related to everybody.
I know, it's not my fault. I can't help it. And if I'm not blood related, then I try and make myself somehow related to everybody.
For me, it didn't matter who they were. You seemed to always be related. Mm. And even if you weren't, the people that were next door, so there was respect, it was always Auntie Adeline and Uncle Pat and all those sort of things.
Mm.
So you were part of this huge family. And when we came to Auckland, of course, I wasn't part of a family.
Right.
It was just so foreign and so different.
Mm.
And I just did not fit in.
That small community and everyone being related, well, related whether by blood or whether by, you know, whanaungatanga of a different sort, by whāngai.
Yeah.
Was that like the idyllic childhood?
I thought so. And my nanny, of course, was a huge part of that.
Mm.
And they took me away from her.
Right.
That was just...
Tell me about your nanny. What did she teach you?
What did she teach me? All sorts of things, because I actually went back home and lived with her for a while. I would go fishing with her at the drop of a hat. I'd go home and we'd go fishing out at Kerikeri because Granny Miku was born on up there as well. Old Woman's Island was part of who we were. And yeah, she taught me how to fish, how to cook, how to sew. My dad did a whole lot of that as well when we came down to Auckland, and then Mum took over then as well. So it was just, we would sit, when we went fishing, we tented. Mm. So I was taught how to take out the earth and fill it with fern, and then put your bed on top. It was better than an in-a-sprung mattress, mate.
Wow.
And then my nana could cook a boot and it would have tasted good. But we'd have the camp oven stove and she'd cook meals on that, and the dumplings that she cooked would just about lift the lid off. So we would, it was all of the teachings about this very thing, about the going, coming up of the sun and the going down of the sun, and all the stars, and those berries you can have, and watch the tui, and then you can have the karaka berry, and all of those things that you should be aware of.
Mm.
And this you can eat, and that's good for your stomach, and yeah, a whole lot of things.
In your childhood, were you of the generation where you didn't speak te reo Māori or didn't learn te reo Māori as a child, or was it something that was part of your family?
It was sort of part of. And Dad, when we were all together around the table, he would teach us just the basics, like hau mai te tote, hau mai te nahi, hau mai te parawa, and just different things. If I had a problem, Dad, I'd go home to Dad and say, this is what happened. If it happens again, what would I say? So he'd teach me that, and so I'd learn bits and pieces. It wasn't that I wasn't allowed to learn. It's just that it wasn't part of my growing up. If they had left me at home with Nana, that would have been different again. Because my dad said that Granny Mickey was training him to take over from her style thing. That's why he learned all these things. But then the Second World War came, so he went to war. And, yeah, so then she was, in those days they called it second childhood. Now they call it dementia.
Right.
So Granny Mickey and I were children together, and they put us in, Nana put us in a double bed so that if Granny Mickey got out of bed, I would tell.
Mm.
So we were children together.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've never heard of it spoken in that way before, second childhood. You know, we talk about dementia and Alzheimer's and we know the effects that they have on whānau, but I've never actually heard it in that way, and that's a much more beautiful way of thinking about it and talking about it,
yeah.
Especially with the challenges that come with it for whānau.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it is. It is challenging. Unfortunately, our mum has just gone through dementia, but she's passed, so she's at peace with God. I reckon that I would rather have cancer than dementia, seeing all this. Yeah.
When you were a child or in your younger years, what did you want for your life? What did you think you were going to go off and do?
When I was up north and I guess I left there at 10, it was just a fun world and I had no ambitions whatsoever. In Auckland, I very soon learned about money and what it could buy. So for me, it was work as hard as I could and buy my own home. And that was another story. I had a home loan here in Māngere Bridge. And when I was ready to buy a home, I went in and had an appointment with the bank manager. And he said, what can I do for you? I said, I've come to get a loan so that I can buy my house because I've got a home loan with you. And he stood up and came around the side of the table and he said, when you get married, you come back and see me. And I said, but I saved all that money in that bank account. And with that, he sort of almost picked me up by the arm and said, you come back and see me when you get married. And I thought, sod you too.
Wow.
So don't tell me it's hard today. It's always been hard.
Yeah.
But if you've got goals, you can achieve anything. Absolutely anything. And don't forget, women have got to work twice as hard.
That's right.
At getting places.
Mm.
But it's getting better.
Did you end up going back and getting a loan?
No. What I did was I thought, sod you. So I went to Māori Affairs because I spoke to Brownie Puriri. He was in Auckland then. And he said, we can get you a Māori Affairs loan. You've got to do D to D to D. And then he said, do you realise, Yvonne, how great your great-great-grandfather was? And I said, well, no, I'm just starting to learn about all of that stuff. He said he was one of the greatest tohungas that was around. He could call fish to the water's edge. So I, you know, all of these things that are part of me made me more determined, because if you were like that, man, am I going to let you down? Hell no. So then I went to Māori Affairs and they had run out of money. So then I went to Housing Corp and yes, but I had to get a second loan. And yeah, but I worked 5 years really hard, doing three jobs, and I got my home.
What was the cost of homes back then?
My unit was worth $27,500.
Oh, my goodness.
It's now over $800,000, wow. Heading towards nine.
Wow.
So, but it's all relevant.
Yeah.
And I did all of that and travel around the world and do cruises and what have you on $10 an hour. So I don't understand, as I said to a young lass that came with the corrections today, you know, there's no such thing as can't. Mm. I don't choose to do things, but there's no such thing as can't. Because don't tell me that a woman isn't smart enough. She's smart enough to bring up a family and be the very best that she can and hope that her children improve on her life. So there's always a way of doing things.
Mm.
The most important thing that you have is your mouth. You've got to talk to people and ask. You can only be told yes or no.
You talk about travelling the world and you have travelled to a number of different places, but one of the things you really made sure of was that you visited all of the places or the kāinga that you whakapapa to.
Yes.
So you have your heritage over in, is it the UK?
Yes.
So where is it there? Wales?
Yeah, Wales, because I'm a Thomas.
Yep.
And also Scotland, and that's on both sides, on my mum's side and my dad's. And when I, we've got writings from my great-grandfather. They went from, they were persecuted in Scotland by the Poms. And so they went to Canada and then they heard about all this growing wheat and stuff in New Zealand. So they got on these little flimsy boats and came out to New Zealand. You know, so every part of me has come from somewhere out there. The Maori came from Hawaii or Asia in the first place. The Scottish part came from Scotland, all those way away. Or Wales, all that way away. So, am I a proud person? Hell yes. Because I'm as proud of each one of those.
Mm.
How can you pick one when you've known all your old tupuna? How can you do that? I can't. This is me, and I'm very proud that I was born in New Zealand. And man, am I proud to say that I'm a New Zealander and I have a Maori heritage as well.
Over the years, you have done a number of jobs and participated in a number of amazing roles. What was your first job?
Working in a chemist shop in Papakura.
Oh, yeah.
For Eric Kugler.
Wow. What was the attraction to that job?
I think he offered, told Dad that he'd give me a job.
As what happens a lot of the time.
Yeah, back then, yes. So, but I was just breaking my bum to get back home to Nana. So I had a year with him and then went back up to Nana and worked in Pip Williams's chemist shop in Kaikoi.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then what were some of the other career pathways you took from there?
Oh, what have I done? I've done all sorts. You know, I'm a jack of all trades and master of none. But along the way, I've learnt some very good life skills.
Yeah.
And the people that I've met. I've been in the newspaper world as a compositor. They actually called us strippers because we were doing... cold set, not hot set, and you could strip the stuff. It was only waxed on the papers. And then I drove for John W. Andrew when they were in Khyber Pass. Then I drove for Quickstick International for many years, got my HT licence, got pulled up on the motorway, and the cop says, oh, where's, it's all right, I'm just checking. And he said, oh, where's your HT licence? I said, I don't need one. And he said, yes, you do. And I said, no, they told me that I didn't need one. And then he said, well, I'm telling you, you do. If I pick you up in 2 more weeks and you haven't got an HT licence, I'll book you. So I went and got an
did
HT.
You, but did you tell him you were once a stripper, so it's okay?
I told that to a cop, a black and white one up in Kaikui. I got done for speeding. And he said, what's your occupation? I said, stripper. Then I elaborated, yeah. But I got my HT licence in Three Kings. And I was the first woman that this cop was, had put through.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was something
That's
else.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so you've also been part of the Order of St. John.
Hmm.
And is that in an ambulance capacity?
No, but I've volunteered in ambulances, and that's, people need to do things like that to find out how lucky they are.
Mm.
My dad has been in St. John's since he was 20-something, 70-odd years. And I wanted to join St. John, but you had to wear frocks. Skirts I can handle, frocks, no. So then I heard that they were going to go into skirts, so yes, I joined. And turned up one Christmas day in my uniform for my dad, and he cried.
Oh.
Yeah, so he was pretty proud of that. And I ended up being superintendent of the Mungere Division. So, man, that was something else. And it's, as I say, life has taught me a whole lot of things because, boy, I was so nervous. We had the Governor-General, Sir Bernard Ferguson, came there one day to one of my parades. Oh, man. And I was really, I was holding a cup and it was shaking. But he just settled me down and really, you know, what has anybody got to be worried about? They're exactly the same as you, only mm-hmm. they've just taken different paths.
Yeah.
So never, ever think of yourself as being any less than anybody, because you're not. You just haven't had the same chances.
That's right.
Yep.
What brought you here to the gardens?
A friend of mine rang me up and said, Yvonne, there's a job in the courier. You need to ring for it. I said, what is it? She said, open the paper. Have you got the paper? Yes, I have. So it was, they wanted mentors for teaching people at the teaching gardens.
Mm.
And this was when it was Manukau Council. And Robert, this was an idea that Robert Finlay had. And so, yeah, went in there and everybody said who they were around this table. He got us all in. And the last one before they had a little break was Mona Nemo. She's from Mangakahia. And so she got up and spoke and said, I have 7 daughters. And I thought, wow. At the end of her speech, everybody clapped her because, man, what she had done in life, amazing. So her and I were put here. And I can tell you there was nothing here, no bush, nothing. They'd ploughed up 15 gardens, 10 metres by 10 metres, and there was clay and not a lot of dirt at all. And I can remember standing out the back here and saying to Mona, what the fuck have we done? Man, it was huge. I've gardened all my life, and I've had my own business as a gardener. I call myself Gardens Galore. But this was just something else. But we did one corner at a time, got that done. And we also got on to Rose Weir, got us into Zealandia when they were in Panama Road. So we would go every Friday and pick up waste plants and things and bring them back and plant them. We had a few people here, and we had refugees that were from Bangladesh. I can't remember. They were through here anyway. So we planted up and gave and all sorts of stuff. But bit by bit, and then we got the PD Manurewa Corrections boys in, and they helped. Their muscle was really important. So this was only supposed to be for 4 years. And I guess I kind of knew that. So between Mona and I, we sort of got it into a trust.
Mm.
And that wasn't doing so well until Graham Hansen came along. And he's one really, really smart dude. And he, I guess Mona got busy with grandchildren and all the rest of it. So for a couple of years I was on my own here. And I guess her and I got this place to intermediate. Mm. But Graham will take it to university.
When I look around this, the Auckland, well, this teaching garden space, there is so much to take in. I mean, the birds have not stopped singing the whole time we've been having this kōrero so far, which tells me there's so much life here.
Yeah.
There are manuka trees, there are tikauka, so we've got a whole lot of natives that are planted here, harakeke. But you also have these garden plots that are full of kai that are grown by members of different communities that come in. And you were just telling me earlier that there's wetlands here now that have been uncovered and inanga that are
yes.
living in there. There's so much life here. My question to you is, A, what is the purpose of this place? And B...
Bye-bye,
you all.
Bye-bye.
And B, what impact has it had on you?
What is the purpose of this place? We're 10 minutes from a huge international airport, and yet it is calm here.
Mm.
The birds are here. There's skinks here. There's... rabbits over the back. There's pukeko. I wish they wouldn't be here, but pukeko are here. We have the biggest rats here, but we've got...
I haven't seen one yet, so we're okay. We're still okay.
We've got predator control people coming in here as well so that we can get better at that as well. Because they tell us when our kumas are ready because they start eating them. Mm. So why is this here? You have a botanical garden that is for forest and fauna, and they have a walled garden, very flash. And they do it particularly well. In here, this is somewhere where it is very grounded. We don't have power apart from solar. At any given point in time, we can, if we have a disaster, a place like this is extremely important because there's water, there's food, and all those sort of things here. We've even got solar showers that we were given. Mm. So we can look after a lot of people here because of all the food and bits and pieces. Not only that, if we don't show our children how to light a match, how to light that fire, how to cook something, the bush is important because what can you eat in this bush? Nothing, the kids would say. Well, yes, you can. So you show them that part.
Mm-hmm.
We have even young fellas from corrections. We have them in here and they don't know how to put down a hangi. They don't know how to put down an umu. So we can show them how to do things like that as well. It's all to do with you've got no power, this is how you can live. We have chooks here, so we can show people, you know, that you can have a couple of chooks in your backyard. It's just, this whole place is unpretentious, but it's something that you should always have so that you can touch it, feel it, eat it. When you've got screens and books and things like that, you can't touch and feel and eat. It's got no memories. It's we're hoping that we can put the first very large vertical garden from here up to the road, and that will be part of that park as well, so that people can walk in between, and hopefully they will nurture that for their children and their children's children rather than destroy it because they don't know what it is. So we'll have labelling and stuff like that up there to tell people what it is and when to pick it. Yeah, it's about knowledge. Any knowledge gained is important.
Mm.
And especially if you can feed yourself with it as well. So I can remember being in a time in my life where I had a vegetable garden and I bought a bag of rice and I spent no money, but I paid all my bills.
Wow.
So anything is possible. You are only limited by your own imagination. And there's a good saying up here, problems go away with ideas, efforts and plain hard work. That's Graham Hansen's words. And it's all true. You know, you don't get anything lying on your back. It's, but at the end of it, when you sit in your own home and think, nobody can put me out of here, this is mine, that's a really, really nice feeling. You are in charge of yourself.
Mm.
You answer to no one.
One of the things that I took from that kōrero was these kind of spaces are ones where memories are created and made, and that is so important because we don't often get hands-on experiences in a digital world.
No.
And we live in a digital world.
Yes.
And I love coming to places like this because it reminds me of my childhood. And it reminds me of my grandparents, yeah. and my grandfather always had a garden, and I have a garden, and I'm shit at keeping anything alive because I live in a digital world, and no matter how much, you know, I kind of go through phases of, yeah. of like, yeah, my garden looks amazing, which it currently does because there's been a lot of rain,
yes.
and my garden's looking really amazing through no effort of my own. And, you know, you were talking to me earlier about a memory you have with your nana walking through and her telling you to, you know, eat an apple.
Yeah.
Eat an apple off the tree and this is why and all these sorts of things. When we think about the goodness that comes from spaces like this, that comes from this mātauranga, this knowledge, what is it that we need to ensure we're giving our tamariki? Because my generation live in this digital world and my children, so my daughter lives in an even more digital world, and I try really hard as a mama to not have her consumed by technology. But there's only going to be so much of that I can control until she comes into her own and you know, that could eventually take over. And, you know, I want her to have memories like this and to have knowledge like this, but I don't have a lot of it myself. What is it that we could be doing and learning from your experience being in this space?
I honestly and truly believe spaces like this are important, our marais are important, but just not buildings. They need to have, if they can't be bothered putting vegetable gardens in, put in fruit trees, you know, so that the kids can go and pick an apple and what have you. It's not really that hard. And utilise the old people, instead of them sitting back here wasting, utilise them.
Mm.
And old people and children go very well together, extremely well. So whilst you've got those old people, you get them as part of that. If you've got daycares and things at marais, get your old people in there. Bring them in once a week, you know, to kōrero to these old Koyas and Papas. It's not everything from yesterday is right. Mm-hmm. Not everything from yesterday is wrong. What you do, if you're smart enough, is you take all the good things and always take them with you. It's like seeds of knowledge. You always take them with you. And no matter where you are, you can always bring them back up again. And you could grow a garden in anywhere in England if you wanted to. Grow silver beet. You know, nowhere else on earth do they eat greens like we do.
Really?
Yep. And all the bread overseas seems to be hard. And
like stone.
Oh, man, when I came home, I wanted to turn the water on and drink that water. I wanted to have a big boil-up, and I wanted a Vegemite sandwich or a Marmite sandwich. Oh, man, yeah, the greens was a big thing for me. I just couldn't get enough of it.
Mm.
So coming home, I cried when I flew across the mud flats. For the children of tomorrow, you've still got old people around to impart knowledge on them. And I think that if we had more elderly people once a week going into daycares, those yesterday things would always be talked about. Mm. Because I have gone from, in Okaihau, from no lights, no cars, to this day and age. But I've always taken those memories and those things that should happen all the way through with me. Mm. So if that happened with me, don't blame a digital age for some things not happening. It's because all those things are important always, not just when it suits you. Yeah.
What have you learnt being here and amongst this space? Because I don't even want to call it a garden. Like, garden is not even enough of a word for what this little community is. And there are people working around us and walking and pushing wheelbarrows around us as we're talking.
And those people are 80 years old.
Wow.
So they're not sitting at home. And those two that have just gone past actually come from Henderson.
And they come all the way to Mangere. They catch three buses
and come to Mangere here to do their gardening. And then we've got the lass that's going to take them partway home. She's an oncology nurse. And she comes here. She came here with her mum and dad and knew nothing. But she comes here to put all that cancer stuff there. Mm. And what she nurtures can feed her family and she feels good about it. So, yeah, we've got people here from the Sudan and they don't have weeds. They eat their weeds.
Mm.
We've never been that hungry. People fascinate me all the time. And that's the richness that I feel that I am, because I've learnt so much. I've tasted so many different things. Now, the Chinese, we have a lot here, they eat differently to us. They eat because this will nurture their tummy, this will nurture their spleen, that will do this. This is good for... They eat because the food that they take in is good for some part of them. Whereas you and I eat because, oh, I love the taste of that. It's going to stuff up my liver, but but they don't do that. And they work really hard. And one of the ones that went past here before that went with Guan, she's 80, and she's just dug a metre depth in a trench and filling it up with good stuff for her yams that she will grow for next year.
Wow.
So, yeah, I'm more aware of all sorts of things. Then the Indians, and we're spoiled for choice for flavours here now. We've got Indians, we've got Sudanese, we've got Pakistanis, we've got Chinese from the top to the bottom, all different shapes of faces and things. And then we've got Muslims working beside Hindis and Christians. And as I say to people, see all these trees and things here. Do you know not one of them argues with its neighbour?
Mm.
Not one of them. So if you can do that, you're more than welcome to stay. Yeah, it's just, it's taught me a lot about me as well. I've gentled down because I'm not little for nothing. And I've had to fight very hard for the life that I've had. But I feel, right from the word go, when Mona and I came here, it just, right from then on, it was God brought us here. Now, I'm not a go-to-church person, but I believe in the Great Almighty. And it seemed that whatever we needed sort of turned up within a week.
Mm.
So for me, God works here. God walks here. And good. yeah, it's just a neat place to be. I've even had PD boys come and say, "It's a nice place here, miss. You nobody judges you here, eh?" Yeah, so
I like that. It's transformational.
Yeah.
It's a space. You know, as you already express, it's a welcoming space, and it's a space where not only the clay grows.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. You can call this a marae, you can call it a church, you can call it whatever you like, but everybody blends here well.
Mm. When you think of the values that are embedded in a place like this, in terms of, you know, the environmental values of composting kai and reducing our waste and growing food, you know, at the source, growing food and eating the food you've grown as opposed to buying it. When you think about the use of pesticides and not using pesticides, and I think I remember one time I came here to photograph you for something, I can't remember what it was, but you were talking to me about how some of these people who catch three buses to get here collect their mimi,
yep,
and bring it on the bus.
On the bus, in milk
bring
bottles.
Bring it on the bus in milk bottles and put it on their garden for certain plants because it helps their plants to grow. And
it's natural. Nitrogen. Yep. Because in my day of growing up, if you had gatherings at your home, the ladies used the toilets and the men used to pee around the lemon trees outside. You know that they were the sweetest lemons. And we seem to have them all year round.
And this is like a thing that we don't remember anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like it's been lost or it's become, oh no, you can't do that because what if someone sees you? Or, you know, you've got to be proper and you've got to be whatever. But when you think of all of these values that underpin this place, what are some of those core values that you think we all need to learn from and know and try and incorporate into our lives?
This land, New Zealand, is our Papatūānuku. She is our mother. I just wish that people would respect her a whole lot more. And our people, our Maori people, have no excuse whatsoever not to respect her, because we were the first ones here. And when I hear of our people being picked up for getting power and undersized snapper and all that sort of thing, I think that they have lost their way. That's not what we were taught. That's not what you do. So, and I feel sad for those sort of people because the money thing has become more important than the values that they were taught. And those values are to love one another, to respect one another, and to respect this land, New Zealand, for the life that we have. For we are more fortunate than anywhere else in the world. And we really, really need to stop and take toll on how we act, because it's like kids have come in here and I've seen them break branches on our fruit trees. So I've just quietly gone up to them and said, now, if I took your little finger and broke that off, would that be okay? Oh, no. And I said, well, that tree, you've hurt that tree, but it's only a tree. But it's not only a tree. It has the right to life. And it has the ability to nurture and feed you and keep you alive. You need to respect it for that. I guess going to see Avatar changed a lot of my thinking as well, because they thanked everything for their life as they took it or killed it or whatever. And that made a lot of sense to me. Because if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't live, would we? So everything has the right to life.
When you look at your life, and you've got a whole lot of life left, when you look back at your life so far, what has been a highlight? And there's probably many, but what has been one of the highlights?
There has been many, 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 many of them. But twice within 2 weeks, I got to carry the New Zealand flag when I was in St John. One was for the first World Rugby Club rugby game at Eden Park, and the second was for St John Church Day up the Parnell Cathedral. That was something special for me. I could tell you that it was having lunch with royalty. I could tell you that it was sitting down with the Queen's representatives and things like that. But it was carrying my country flag that will always stick in my mind.
What was it about that that was so significant to you?
Because I'm a proud New Zealander. Whoever I'm part of. And I think we all need to start saying that instead of being separatist. Jimmy Piao lived at the end of our street at one stage, beautiful Samoan family. And I can remember him winning a gold medal, and he stood up and said, I'm a very proud New Zealander and I'm a Samoan. And I thought, that'll do me, because that's what we all need to say. Yeah.
When you look at, I mean, we've talked a bit about your nan, and we've talked about, you know, some other beautiful women who have been in your life over the years who have, you know, helped to establish this place. Who is an Indigenous woman that has inspired you on your journey?
Fiona Cooper always sticks in my mind, and I can close my eyes. Well, I don't have to close my eyes. I can see her walking with her granddaughter on that hikoi that went down to Wellington to make sure that they took notice of what was right. And I guess that in itself is enough for me, like holding the flag. Yeah. You watch my smoke, because I can do anything. Mm. Yeah. She was... it's not everybody that... you know, you can't please everybody. And there were those who were, oh, that tart. Oh, da, da, da. But at the end of the day, look at her core principles and the things that she stood for. And I can remember one of her sayings was, underneath every one of those wee-wee plants is gold. Now, what did she mean by that? You think, what did she mean? If you dig up that plant and that one, that whole paddock becomes useful then. It's not full of wee-wee grass at all. It's full of grass. Mm. And then you can grow on it or have cattle on it or whatever you want. So, yeah, there's some very well-thought sayings from a lot of very, very bright people. And they're just ordinary.
What would be your saying? What would you leave for the world?
What would I want to leave behind? I don't know. I really haven't thought about that. But I guess I leave a whole lot of, like this wee lass that I was talking to today, don't ever, ever let anybody deter you from the goals that you want. Because it's all achievable. If you grab it by the throat, you'll always have it.
I love that. We've come to the final question already. I love sitting here talking with you. And I especially love sitting in this space talking with you because it is such a peaceful space. I love that... You know, we've got a makeshift kitchen that's in a container that's being powered by solar. We've got, you know, just the most basic of things that is everything you need, yet at its most basic and easiest form to get. I want to ask you, what is your hope for the future of Indigenous women?
I've just got to tell you that my nanny has come to visit. That's the tui that you can hear.
Oh, kia ora, nanny.
Yeah. Bless her. I asked her this morning if she'd come and be with me today. So there you go.
Well, she has.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye. I love that we're just like in the middle of the podcast. People are coming and going. We're waving, absolutely, waving at people to say goodbye. Well, now that nanny's here, nanny might be able to... Oh, geez. Nanny wants to have a kōrero. Can you hear her?
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that. She might be whispering in your ear what her hopes are. But what is your hope for the future of Indigenous women?
I would really like for Indigenous women to really believe in themselves. I had a van load of five girls come from Mangere Corrections one day. The five of them were hapu, and I said to them, now, you know, why, you know, you're all married, and, oh, no, I said, well, you don't need to do that. You know, you have the right to choose a good father. You don't have to just settle for anything. And if you had a terrible life, why would you want your child to have a terrible life as well? Our dad always said, if you think that I did so bad, you go and do better. Mm. And we all have, really. But I just wish that they would think better of themselves. They're the most beautiful people in the world, and I see them. I've seen them broken and bent in, when I worked in Middlemore Hospital, voluntary, with their eye hanging out and broken noses and split lips, and, you know, and they don't need to do that. And they need to teach their children that that's not the norm, that's not what it's about. I just get really cross that they won't stand up better for themselves and choose better. They don't have to. They're the best there is in the world. They just got to believe in it. And it's hard sometimes when somebody keeps poking you down, but, you know, you just got to keep coming back up again. Never, ever give up. And especially if you've had children, they're a God-given gift and you've got to break your ass for them. Yeah, the Great Almighty didn't see fit for me to have kids. I wonder why. But I'm a very good aunt. And, yeah, whenever they ring up and want something, I had James ring up. Aunt, have you still got your HD licence? Yes, I have, James. Oh, well, I've got a job as a shepherd up in Taupo Bay. Can if I hire the truck, will you drive it? Of course I will. Yeah, you know, those are lovely, lovely things to happen, eh?
That's beautiful. And you're so right. We are the greatest things and we need to honour ourselves for that.
Absolutely. You know, I have these young fellas on sometimes here and they're talking and I say, now, I tell you what, you guys, you better be careful, you know, how you treat your ladies because there's artificial insemination going on now and they can go and choose dads. What if they put all you fellas down? You know? do you? Oh, no, miss... Oh, I'm telling you, you better be careful.
What's in store for Auntie Yvonne over the next, you know, 12 to 18 months? Because one of the things, actually, even though I asked my last question, I'm going to ask you another one because I can.
Yep.
I'm allowed.
Yes, you are.
But it just came to my mind that we talked a bit about succession planning. And the importance of succession planning prior to us having this recorded kōrero. And, you know, in my asking you what's coming up for you in the next 12 to 18 months, you know, maybe my other question also is, and how is succession planning so important for all of us to think about the legacies that we've built and how those are going to continue?
If you don't have things in place, it's like when you find a person to share your life with and then have children. That is you replacing yourself with the children that you have. In here, I've been very, very fortunate in a young fella called Graham Hansen coming along because this is now his project. And he knows that I said to him, I'll give you until I'm 75 and then I want to sort of back off. Well, that sort of hasn't happened, really. But it just keeps being exciting. And then I look at the Chinese and at 80, they're still wheeling around wheelbarrows full of horse shit. And I think, well, yeah, okay. But it's... I'm now concentrating more on growing plants and fruit trees and things like that. At the back here, we're going to have an area that I can do all that rather than a bit here, but there, somewhere else. And then we're going to have a plastic house on the side here. So those will become my cherished things where in the wintertime, if I took a couple of weeks off, it really wouldn't matter. But I sort of find that, oh, well, that's the next exciting piece and I don't want to miss out on any of that. And that's going to happen very shortly and I wouldn't mind being part of that. All I've got to do is learn to keep my mouth shut, though.
The young people today call that FOMO.
Oh, right.
Fear of missing out. That's what you've got. You've got FOMO.
Well, I guess Mona said it at one stage, you and I birthed this baby. And I guess that's what has happened. Could I walk away? In the people that are here, yes, I could. Do I want to? No, I don't. Not yet. Not yet. I'd like to sort of have a couple of weeks where I did a trip down the South Island and came back. How could you lose interest in something like this? It's ever-changing. And I just hope that successive governments and local boards and things see the value in this. Mm. Up here, I'd really love to see that as a really beautiful big playground for kids with barbecues and fa'alays, and so that you and I got a half a dozen kids. Oh, we'll take them down to the old school reserve and have a barbecue, see the kids playing. Mm. If they had a BMX trike, a small one, and the hoopy thing, the basketball thingy, and then maybe a big pick-it-up chess set. You know,
See, you're not going anywhere. You've got way too many plans.
I just got to talk people into, you know, because I'd hate to think that they just put houses on there. That would be a crime.
Mm.
Would be a terrible crime, because here in this area through here, they've got no playgrounds. They've got a hunk of dirt. But, yeah, you know, our people deserve better than that. Mm. If we were in Rimawera, would they have it? My God, yes, they would.
Mm.
Just because we're in Māngere, don't treat us like a bunch of jungle bunnies. We're not. We're intelligent people. Mm. And we're important people. If we've got a lot of street sweepers in this area, do you know they talk about the police being very important, and they are. They talk about nurses and doctors and ambulance drivers. All of those people are important, extremely important. But if the people that pick up rubbish didn't do their job, none of those people would be able to do their job.
That's right.
So I reckon we should have a cleaners day.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
There you go, whānau, you heard it. Somebody organise it. And Yvonne's here to help make it happen.
I said to one young fellow, he was picking up rubbish up the top here with a face on him like a twisted sand shoe. And I said, put my hand out and I said, I'd like to shake your hand. And he sort of looked at me. So he shook my hand and I said, do you know, if it wasn't for people like you, I wouldn't be able to drive my car on the road. Thank you very much for the job that you do. And that's the other thing. We need to appreciate those people, because without those people, we wouldn't be able to go anywhere.
That's right. And I think that is such an important, it is such an important whakaaro, and it's such an important thing for us to remember is what has society deemed as success and successful and things worth celebrating and people worth acknowledging. And actually we need to remember that every single one of us
Everyone
is successful, everyone is worth acknowledging, and everyone plays their part in one way or another. And it is so important that we don't forget that. We don't forget the people. And one of the things that you had said about the paharakeke that has been planted here is that there's a plaque there that says, you know, he tangata, he tangata, he tangata, and it is people.
Yes.
And so that's a beautiful whakaaro for you to leave us with, and thank you so much for that. So in saying that, I want to thank you. I want to do give a mihi to you and thank you for all of the mahi that you have done all throughout your life, because each part of that journey has helped someone, has been impactful, and has led you to where you are today. I want to thank you for the amazing work that you've done here with these gardens, and thank your nanny, because you know that tui, she's gone for a cup of tea break now.
Yep.
But
she came, God love her.
But I think it is so important for us to remember that these community spaces exist, and that they are significant, and that they are available for us to come and participate in and contribute to, and they also have those values and those lessons that we can take home for our whānau. And all throughout, you know, this podcast series, one of the things that has come up in almost every single conversation is the importance of connection in that we've lost so much connection to each other, connection to our environment, connection to our mātauranga, you know, and connection is key to us thriving as Indigenous women moving forward. And so, you know, thank you for ensuring that we stay connected in this space.
You're a beautiful person. Thank you very much for your time.
You're so welcome. Just before I go, I have to remember to remind everybody that the Nuku book is currently available on pre-order at nukuwoman.co.nz. It features all 100 of our phenomenal, amazing, kick-ass Indigenous wahine. I'm so proud of each and every one of them. And I'm so excited to bring this book to you. So you can get it online, nukuwoman.co.nz, pre-order your copy, and we'll make sure that when it is launched, we'll get it out to you. Kia ora. Don't forget, whānau, our book, Nuku, Stories of 100 Indigenous Women, is currently available on pre-order. Make sure you grab yourself a copy. Want to know more about our book? Nuku, Stories of 100 Indigenous Women is a powerful and important snapshot of Indigenous wahine today. Through wide-ranging voices, this ambitious social documentary allows you to obtain authentic insight into life as an Indigenous wahine in a way like never before. The stories recorded are of incredible wahine. Each offers significance to the story of mana wahine. From Oscar-nominated filmmakers and award-winning musicians, to scientists, entrepreneurs, tribal leaders, artists, environmental champions, knowledge holders, mothers, and more. These Nuku wahine seek to influence the world around them. The youngest is 14 and the eldest is in her mid-70s. They are wahine Māori, Moriori, Pasifika, Melanesian, Wiradjuri, Himalayan, and Mexican. Order your copy today at www.nukuwoman.co.nz.